This is Weekly Advice from Everyday Experts, a podcast from hubpages.com in which we discuss hubs or articles on the site that we find to be particularly interesting. Today, I'm with Michelle Pedro, and I'm Simone Smith, by the way, if I didn't say that. And we both stumbled across a really, really interesting article on, of all things, cyberculturals and Zen Buddhism. Which is written by Luke Kaur on HubPages, who is from Manchester, England, and is a mixture of a musician and a writer and a photographer, and apparently also a student or professor of some sort, because he's really written this article like an academic article with Harvard referencing, and it's pretty much a formal essay with references at the very end and good citations and several arguments, and we thought that it would be really fun to discuss it here because some of the arguments that he gives and the quotes that he offers are really thought-provoking, and you might enjoy them just as much as we did. So, Michelle, what made you interested in this article from the start?
Well, I think when I first looked over it, of course, Buddhism caught my eye because I am a student of Buddhism. Growing up in a pretty conservative Catholic church, Buddhism is very different from how I grew up.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of sparked my interest. And then I moved out to the Bay Area.
Where there are Buddhists everywhere.
Yeah, where there's Buddhists and there's yoga practicing. And it was so different from how I grew up. And it really sparked my interest. So I think my interest kind of grew from yoga and meditation. And it's sort of found its place. And I'm just now skimming the surface of what it means to be Buddhist and the whole idea of Buddhism. So when I came across this article, you know, I'm part of a generation where our life is, you know, so heavily, I guess,
inundated with materialism.
Yeah, inundated with materialism. But not only that, but we live so much of our life in cyberspace, whether it be texting a friend instead of calling.
Oh, so true.
Or emailing a thank you instead of writing a handwritten thank you card and putting it in snail mail. I very much myself am a participant in that cyber culture. And, you know, I think the whole title of the article, Cyber Cultures and Zen Buddhism, seems like an extreme oxymoron because, you know, they shouldn't even be, you know, it doesn't seem like they should be part of the same sentence, let alone, you know, an entire article talking about, you know, bringing the two together. But
you're so right. On the surface, it seems like cyberculture is the antithesis of Zen Buddhism, and that
exactly,
you know, people are like, oh, no one's talking to each other, they're just texting, and, you know, like all those little things.
Right.
And like cyberculture is, oh, it's so complicated,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't make any sense, there's too much language, there's too much everything, and Zen Buddhism seems to be all about simplicity and paring things down, but
mm-hmm.
oh, no. Apparently. And I quite agree. I mean, when I read this title, I was like, yes, I know exactly what you mean. Because I think that maybe it has to do with our different backgrounds. I was actually raised a Buddhist from birth. And,
oh, you were?
Yeah, I totally was.
Well, I didn't know that, Simone.
Yeah. I didn't know you were raised in a really Catholic community.
Yeah,
it's
very conservative.
So we're just learning all kinds of things. But, I mean, yeah, I think since maybe I was raised with some of those core principles, not that I know a whole lot about Buddhism at all, because I was just a kid when I went to Dharma school, and I kind of, you know, I'm negligent.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just made more inherent sense to me, or like I grew up believing or, mm-hmm. or looking for those patterns instead of more Christian patterns. Like,
yeah,
when I read
exactly.
the Bible in high school, it blew my mind. Like, suddenly all these inside jokes made sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a little bit of that with this, but yeah, I mean, if you are kind of curious as to how cyberculture could have anything to do with Zen Buddhism, well, we will help you explain with the help of Luke Kaur, who
yes.
did a really good job. And basically, he presents an investigation into the connections between cyberculture and Zen Buddhism. That's
mm-hmm.
how he introduces his article. And Well, I guess first we have to really discuss what some of the basic terms are. So what is a cyberculture? Lucor presents a quote from someone else saying, cyberculture challenges many accepted conventions of popular culture. One such concept is the idea of the self. People construct new identities online. Another is the collapse of social and intellectual distinctions. The nature of the internet means that people can interact over massive distances, forging new connections across cultures. So essentially, cyberculture is any culture online that allows you to connect with other people who could be right next to you or could be across the world. So what is the self? He offers a really good explanation of that from a Buddhist standpoint, because obviously here a self is, I guess, your real life person. So it would be Simone Smith or Michelle Pedro, and that's who we are. According to, difficult names, but H. Sadhasita? No, I didn't get it right, but whatever. Go to the article and read it. In Buddhist Ethics, in a 1970 publication, introduces the concept of self this way. To those who hold these views that feeling is myself, it should be said that feelings may be happy, unhappy, or neutral. Any one of these three feelings, while it endures, excludes the other two. All of them are impermanent, conditioned arising from other relations, things of decay, age, destruction, annihilation. If to a person experiencing any one of them should seem, this is myself, then with the passing of that feeling, it should also seem to him, gone is myself. So basically, the idea of the self being your current mixture of emotions is kind of a weird construct, just because as soon as those emotions go away, your self goes away, at least as you had just defined yourself. So basically, the whole principle, and it's kind of complicated, is that reality isn't permanent, that one solid state isn't permanent. There is no like building block called Simone Smith or Michelle Pedro or you. It's something that will always change and is not permanent. And one of the big sources, at least according to Buddhism, of suffering is our clinging to that sense of self and other things and saying like, no, I don't want it to change. Don't go away. I'm going to stay like this forever, because that's impossible. So it's like you're fighting a losing battle, and that's not going to make you very happy in life. So what is the self if it isn't this one distinct mixture of emotions? As Lucor explains in his essay, basically there's this idea of oneness, that you're part of everything. It's not just what's inside your body or what's inside your family or what's inside your country. We're all connected. So I think that one way in which the self obviously becomes a little bit more zenized in cyberculture is that there really isn't one person. The entire internet is comprised of a network of things that all work together. And I mean, even like the one person that you are online really isn't the same person. I mean, you maybe have your Facebook self, and then you have that random like forum troll that you happen to be sometimes. And you have someone who makes claymation YouTube videos, and there are all sorts of different pieces of you, and they're all you. But no one piece represents you. So, I don't know. Do you see yourself as part of something bigger, Michelle? Or do you, I mean, what do you think of that whole idea of the Zen Buddhist self and the cyber culture self?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. You know, and the fact that, you know, people can portray themselves in different ways, you know, through all sorts of cyber outlets. I think for me, what I've struggled with, you know, the whole rising of the cyber culture is the impersonal way that we interact with each other. A lot of the times, which, you know, what Buddhism teaches, from what I've learned so far, is the oneness and bringing together you know, at the end of the day, we're all human, and that sort of idea that we're all one with the universe, with each other. So the idea of cyberculture seems a little impersonal, but one of the things that I read in the article, if I can find it here. So this is kind of what sparked my interest on it. It says, Buddhism, and Zen in particular, leads to the idea of oneness. Zen teaching can be described as the wordless knowing of the essence and oneness of all things. This implies that all things are in some way connected, and by this connection, the self can be considered peripheral. So yeah, that was interesting to me because in some way, our growing cyber culture is really bringing so many different people together, you know, through this one outlet online or on the phone or, you know, different blogs expressing different opinions. So I think in that way it's interesting and sort of parallels to the idea of Buddhism.
It's true. And I think especially when it comes back to that sense of the self and that sense of either being you or being everything.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's the clinging to one's discrete sense of self that will lead to loneliness or a feeling of isolation or lack of meaning. And when ultimately, like, yeah. when you join, I guess, cyberculture or see yourself as part of the larger world in general, you know that you're never really alone because you're part of everything and you are everything. And by just trying to look through oneself, you're looking at the world through a keyhole. And there's so much that could limit the way that you enjoy life because of that.
Mm-hmm.
So another interesting section of Luke Kaur's discussion is just a short, I guess, he's bringing to the forefront the principle of questioning everything, which is really big in Zen Buddhism. So he quotes a Zen master named Brad Warner, whose name is, yay, easy to pronounce, who says that you should question authority, question society, question reality, question your own rules, and question your own values. Question Zen society, question Zen authority, question other people's views on reality, and question your own. And I think that's such a wonderful, I mean, I just want to wake up and scream that to myself. And it's so Matrix sounding, like, question everything, can't trust anything. But one of the interesting applications of the principle of questioning everything, aside from it just encouraging you to learn and develop as a person, is the idea of connectionist thinking, which he points out. And basically the principle of that is that there's no necessary line or distinction between disciplines like writing or reading or biology or neurology. Like, everything is connected. And to be honest, in history, and because humans kind of like to be OCD and to organize things sometimes, we've decided that this one thing is going to be literature and this one thing is going to be astronomy. When really...
Or art.
Yeah, like, this is art, this is writing. Like, they're separate. And that's definitely not the case. And I mean, from pretty much any perspective, one will realize that the world is an interconnected system. I mean, I guess in the business world, I'm a business student, so I know that around like the 90s or early 2000s, everyone started talking about systems thinking, and suddenly it wasn't about what kind of manager you were or what kind of job this was. It was about how the system worked together, and everyone was like, oh my gosh, this is huge. And I mean, and like in the writing world, right? Everyone's thinking, like, oh my God, I just can't be a newspaper reporter anymore. I have to be a Twitter expert, and I have to make videos, and mm-hmm. I have to be on Facebook. And yes, see, lines are blurring. Everyone's realizing that, but we, I guess, need to put a whole new, like, meta filter on that and realize that it's the entire world. Just like with Zen Buddhism, pointing out that, like, everything is one and connected.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, I think, the great things that's, or a big... Oh, what's the word? Activator. Catalyst. A big catalyst with this understanding of how everything is connected, and the growth of connectionist thinking is, of course, the internet. It enables us to make those connections, and Luke Kaur points that out. So that's another way in which cybercultures and Zen Buddhism are frenzies. So another section of his essay is an exploration of the concept of where I began and where I and in you begin, which is another, I guess, iteration of the discussion of oneness and being part of the greater world. It's, I guess, pretty hard to chew, but Luke Kaur offers a really nice quote. He says, "The Zen philosopher, Alan Watts, put the matter this way. One might think of the stomach as the brain's way of feeding the brain, or one might think of the brain as the stomach's way of finding food. But of course, once you've descended below the level of the integrated organism, there is no way that makes any sense. The brain and the stomach evolve together in the integrated system that is the body. This much we all understand. Their interests can only derive from the interest of the organism of which they are parts." And that's such a good explanation of taking the way that we look at me and you as separate things mm-hmm. and turning it on its head. And I guess the way that the internet can really help us understand that is that as Luke Kaur points out, a person named Ernest Partridge saying, is that the body in cyberspace allows us to see that our minds don't end at our skin. They instead go beyond verbal pathways and are now electronic and eventually fiber optic pathways. So, I mean, you, Michelle, are not just here. You're also the electronic trail you've left on the internet. Mm-hmm. You're all of those waves that you've created. And one thing that really interests me is a lot of cool science fiction novels that discuss the point at which it's possible to move one's consciousness online.
Mm-hmm.
And just like without the body at all. And then there are all these discussions of, well, is that still me? And if I die in my body form, can I back myself up online? And is that going to be the same me or is it a copy? And there mm-hmm. are just these really big discussions of what the self is. And I always thought of those as like really geeky cyberculture kind of things. But after reading this, I'm like, huh, yeah, that's pretty Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think of yourself as something that does expand into the internet or that is more than just yourself, like that's more your ideas? How do you react to that idea of like the our selves sort of seeping out into something more than just our bodies?
Yeah, I guess I haven't really thought about that because, you know, like I said, I've always seen, you know, Buddhism and the internet and Facebook and all these other different portals totally separate. But his quote is very interesting because it aligns so much with that very idea, you know, bringing them together and, you know, these trails that we leave behind that are parts of ourselves. It's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. And I used to think that no, like this whole idea of someday uploading yourself or just having a virtual self or mm-hmm. eventually migrating to just a virtual space is absolutely ridiculous. And no, you will be dead and there will be some sad facsimile of an idea of you out there somewhere. But I'm actually getting to the point where I see myself as just the memes floating around in my brain and that are also part of what other people have given to me and what I've given to other people and weird adaptations of things. Like, that's what I see to be myself now, and that's mm-hmm. all over the place. Which is at once kind of freeing and kind of limiting, because then the real world seems kind of stupid and awkward, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh, I've got feet. What are these feet? What are these toes? Like, it gets really awkward. And one of the fun things that many science fiction writers have done is sort of play around with this idea of people who live just as ideas or virtual selves, like on the internet or on some sort of network, who actually like download temporarily into bodies. And they'll be like, oh, this is so awkward. And it's so funny because, again, it seems really geeky. But then when you think about like Zen Buddhism, this whole idea of like human existence being about suffering and being kind of this awkward mm-hmm. thing that, you know, is full of distractions. It's the same concept, which is just, it's kind of mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go even more mind-blowing, why don't we talk quantum physics, okay?
Oh gosh, that's exactly my strength, so I'm glad you brought that up. No kidding.
Thank goodness. So, oh, darn. Okay. Because I'm not really great at it either. But again, Luke Kaur, as any good academic writer, provides a really good quote from Sean Robsville, who I guess used Buddhism to explain some difficult quantum physics concepts. So I'll just share the Robsville quote that Luke Kaur shares. So he says, basically, what quantum theory says is that fundamental particles are empty of inherent existence and exist in an undefined state of potentialities. They have no inherent existence from their own side and do not become real until a mind interacts with them and gives them meaning. Whenever and wherever there is no mind, there is no meaning and no reality. This is a similar conclusion to the Mahayana Buddhist teachings. I grew up with the Mahayana school, by the way, on sunyata, the emptiness of all things. So basically, it's not there unless you think about it or are there to concentrate on it, which is like, well, yeah. I don't know.
Or is he saying not the fact that it's not there, but it doesn't, it's not defined, it's,
as yeah, it's says not defined here, until we try to make sense of it.
Yeah, it's undefined state of potentialities.
Yeah.
So there is no meaning until we feel a need to define it. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, and as Luke Kaur says in his article, I'll just quote it directly, he says, so things do not become real, are meaningless, until a mind perceives them. Robsville takes this further, applying the idea of the universe as a whole. Quote, the ultimate manifestation of quantum sunyata is when quantum theory is applied to the entire universe. According to some cosmologists, the universe began as a quantum fluctuation in the limitless void, Hartle-Hawking hypothesis. The universe remained as a huge quantum superposition of all possible states until the first primordial mind observed it, causing it to collapse into one actuality. Boom, the mind blows up.
Yes.
Well, I mean, this, I think, ties into quantum suicide, that whole idea that with each possible decision, a new reality splits off because mm-hmm. every possible iteration results. I mean, it's, I think that quantum physics is for another podcast or possibly another person, because I can't wrap my mind around it. I can just kind of like listen to people talk about it or read about it and drool slightly. But basically, it's reality is only what we perceive it to be. And I mean, if maybe I think one of the easiest ways to really, really boil this down is the idea that we think that reality as it stands is kind of the way to go, but maybe reality could just be as real if it were in cyberculture. Or maybe the things that we do online are more, or maybe, yeah, the same or more important than the things that we do in real life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he pointed to presidential elections being held in The Sims, not because it was organized to happen in the game, but because people got together and organized them. Because, in their opinion, what was going on there was more important than what was going on in real life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things like that are happening all over the place. People's online lives are exploding. And in many cases, people are able to find more success online than they could ever find in the real world. Not because the online world is pretend, because it's obviously not. I mean, both of us work for an online writing community. The mm-hmm. internet is a huge part of both of our lives. But it's a new playing field, and it's a new way to look at things. So basically what Luke Kaur closes with is the fact that cyberculture is evolving. It is becoming more important. It is changing the way that we see things. And we need to consider how that paradigm is shifting and to look at the implications of that shift in perspective and the shift in the way that we interface with the world and see the world and understand how things relate together.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately what I take away from this is the fact that while the growth of cyberculture and the change in our lifestyles is, it could be considered violent even, just the general principle of it, of what's happening to us, is ancient as Zen Buddhist philosophy, which is crazy. So nothing's really new. Things are just changing, and we're able to maybe get a better grip on some ancient wisdom than we could ever do so before, or at least in a long time. So props to Luke Court for writing this really amazing article. I hope it's given you a lot to think about. And if you want to share your own academic work on Hub Pages, I recommend that you join. It's free, it's easy, and you can even stand to make a profit from the articles that you publish. So thanks again to Luke Court for the amazing, mind-blowing essay. And good luck figuring out who you are as a person now.